Shrimad Bhagavatam 3rd Canto, Chapter 26, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, Text 38.
Vayoshta Sparshatan Matra,
Rupam Devi Tadabhu,
Rupam Devi Tadabhu.
Samutthitam
tatas tejas
Chakshu
rupopalam bhanam
Vayoshta
sparshatan matra
Rupam daiveri tadabhu
Rupam daiveri tadabhu
Samutthitam tatas tejas
Samutthitam tatas tejas
Chakshu rupopalam bhanam
Chakshu rupopalam bhanam
Vayoshta sparshatan matra
Vayoshta sparshatan matra
Rupam daiveri tadabhu
Rupam daiveri tadabhu
Samutthitam tatas tejas
Samutthitam tatas tejas
Chakshu rupopalam bhanam
Chakshu rupopalam bhanam
Vayo
From here,
sparshatan matra, which evolves from the subtle element touch.
Rupam,
form. Daiva irtat,
according to destiny.
Abhut, evolved. Samutthitam,
arose.
Tatat, from that. Teja,
fire.
Chakshu,
sense of sight.
Rupa,
color and form.
Upalamba,
nama.
Upalambhanam,
perceiving.
Translation. By interactions of the air and the sensations of touch, one receives different forms according to destiny. By evolution of such forms, there is fire, and the eye sees different forms in color. Purport. Because of destiny, the touch sensation, the interactions of air, and the situation of the mind, which is produced of the ethereal element, one receives a body according to his previous activities. Needless to say, a living entity transmigrates from one form to another. His form changes according to destiny and by the arrangement of a superior authority, which controls the interaction of air and the mental situation. Form is the combination of different types of sense perception. Predestined activities are the plans of the mental situation and the interactions of air. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam and the next chapter can seem very difficult. This chapter is entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, and the next chapter is entitled Understanding Material Nature. Sri Kapila Dev, the son of Devahuti, is giving us precious comprehension of how material nature imprisons us. When you're in prison, you often don't understand your situation that has incarcerated you. You don't understand the whole system that is arranging the prisons, maintaining the prisons. You just get caught up in your day-to-day routine. There are some prisoners who are called jailhouse lawyers. Instead of wasting their time in prison, they use it to study law. At least in the USA, the prisons have libraries and their law books there. So very few prisoners decide we're going to use as much time as allowed to go into the library of the prison, study law, and figure out what the whole system is and whether we have been unjustly or inappropriately dealt with. So as I said, they're called jailhouse lawyers. And sometimes they do, through their studies of the system, find that there has been some discrepancy in their trial. Lord Kapila Dev is giving us that kind of jailhouse information. But the amazing thing is, we feel peaceful and comfortable for the moment in the material world, in our prison, and therefore we don't have the motivation to try to understand. We're very unmotivated. Those of you who work, you know that employers, they don't want someone who appears to be unmotivated. They've hired you to be their highly motivated servants. Slaves. And they want to see that you're a goer, that you're keen, that you're ready to surrender. So no boss wants an unmotivated employee. I'm trying to get rid of them. But just look at our situation in material existence. How, if we can be peaceful and gratified for one moment, then things aren't so bad. Life will go on. We get bought off so easily. Just like these little children here. If they can color in some coloring book, if they can do some little activity during Bhagavatam class, then okay, I'll stay for class. They get bought off so easily. Another example is the island of Manhattan, which in my pre-devotee days was, I thought, was a dom. Manhattan dom. I didn't know about mature dom. So, in the early days of the American history, this island was purchased from the Native American Indians by the first European settlers for the sum of $20 worth of trinkets, you know, glittery, jewelry-like objects. The European settlers gave them that in exchange for the whole island of Manhattan. And what were the Native American Indians thinking? These guys, they want some land? What's the big deal? There's land everywhere. Look at these nice trinkets. We've never seen such before. So, the Native American Indians have two assumptions. Number one, these trinkets are unique. To the Europeans, the trinkets were just junk jewelry. But to the Native American Indians, they'd never seen them before. How fascinating. And the second thing the Native American Indians thought was, they want some land. They want this island of Manhattan. There's land everywhere. What do these guys let her know? So yeah, we'll take the island. We'll take these trinkets as cheap jewelry. So we're like that. We have no appreciation of the value of every moment. You think, oh, I've got so much time. What's the pressure? And look at the trinkets I'm getting. Look at the cheap jewelry that I'm getting in my life. I've had a few magic moments where everything clicked. I've had some successes. Life will go on. So in this way, we simply become prisoners that are unmotivated to get out. Whereas those who are the jailhouse lawyer type prisoners, they want to understand what are the fundamental principles of my imprisonment. And this knowledge is what Lord Kapila Dev is trying to give us. But I can understand that this knowledge called Sankhya Yoga can appear difficult to us or very strange. Because when you're a prisoner, due to the daily routine, generally you don't understand the whole prison system that the government has arranged. You're just so caught up in your daily prisoner routine. And this is what happens in material nature. We get so caught up in our daily routine, based on the body, that we, when we do get some information about the whole prison system, it sounds exotic to us and impenetrable, difficult to understand. Sankhya Yoga means to analyze the prison, to analyze the material universe and get to the root. And of course, the root is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what Lord Kapila Dev, an incarnation of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is teaching us. What is at the root of material nature? He's not just simply teaching about material nature. He's teaching where it comes from, what is its purpose, and how to get out. This knowledge is very precious. Now, how the prison is formed is very interesting. How the material elements of the universe combine under various universal influences to give you your next body. This is very essential information. And the whole process of your receiving a particular body, which is a prison in of itself within the prison of material nature, the whole procedure is guided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ultimate authority. Not directly. Because Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, has much better things to do than run a prison. Krishna has his own pleasure pastimes. But through his various agents and potencies, he runs the prison of the material world. And that prison is the entire material manifestation with its countless universes, as well as your body and all the other different types of bodies. So just think, we're trying to understand the universe, but we don't even understand the prison house of this body. This is how ignorant we are. We think this body is a tool for fulfillment and enjoyment. I wonder how many of you think of your body as a prison. No, it's an opportunity. It will do things for me. It will get things for me. It will provide me with pleasing sensations. It will allow me to fulfill my career plans, my relationship plans. My holiday plans. This is my body. But my body is a prison? No. Just feel the opportunities, the sense of opportunities that you get when you consider your body. My body has things to do. My body has potencies. My body will provide a good future. We don't think of our body as a prison that we need to get out of. What Lord Kapila Dev is presenting is that even though the body is a prison, you can use this prison of the body to get out of prison. The example given in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam is that from a tree, you can make the handle to an axe. And with that axe, you can chop down the tree. Similarly, this body comes from material nature. But with this body that comes from material nature, you can chop down the tree of material nature and become free. This is what Krishna urges us in Bhagavad Gita. Asvatu ena suvi ruta mulam. Get to the root of material existence and chop down the tree. With determination. And that determination to chop down the tree of material existence comes in good association. It's often very difficult for us to admit how much we are the product of our association. We think we are independent, we think we are self-determined. We choose our friends, we choose our destiny. We don't understand how we're puppets in material nature. And we are so influenced by our association. The easiest way to produce profound transformations in your life is by changing your association. That's the easiest way. The easiest way to tolerate challenges and difficulties in your life is through the proper association. Proper association helps you to understand how the challenges and difficulties can be used all for the good. Bad association or non-inspiring association will just urge you to think, it's everyone else's fault. Or you try to become too Krishna conscious. You don't have to try so hard. We want the type of association that urges us to get out of jail. We don't want the type of association that urges us, take your time, be comfortable in jail, it'll work out. And while you're here, there are some pleasures, prison house pleasures. No, you want the association that urges you, that makes you enthusiastic to become free from prison. It's very interesting to try to understand what makes us so lazy, sluggish. Part of it is the influence of Kali Yuga. Manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagya kudruta. As the Bhagavatam first canto describes, in the age of Kali, human beings are very slow. They're known as mandas. Slow in pursuing self-realization. But very quick to pursue sense gratification. So you always have to remember you're living amongst the mandas. And they slow you down with reasons that sound so appropriate. and sound so rational. Just take your time. There's no need to rush to any spiritual conclusion. Oh, you're exploring some form of spirituality. That's very nice. It's good to have a little bit of that mixed in with your main goals in life. We want to feel urgency. Is there something wrong with that? Does that make you fanatical? If you're in prison, you want to get out. Those few prisoners who become jailhouse lawyers, they want to get out of the place. There must have been something wrong that happened during my trial, some violation of the judicial process. Generally, such prisoners, they didn't have enough money to hire a first-class lawyer. You know, in the age of Kali, you get the justice that you can pay for. So, those who generally are in prison, they never had money to get a first-class lawyer. They have to rely on the public defender who's overworked and almost always the top legal talent doesn't become a public defender because you don't get much money from that. The top legal talent wants to represent those persons who have lots of money because then they can charge. The lawyers can charge a high fee. Occasionally you get these public defenders who are committed to idealism. We want everyone to have competent legal aid. Occasionally. So there you are, in prison. If you're intelligent, you think, how did I get here? And how can I get out? Let me be enthusiastic and feel a sense of urgency. So such prisoners, every spare moment they can, they're in the library, the prison library, studying law books. You know, law books are very dry. They're not entertaining. They're not meant for your entertainment. But the prisoners are so eager. They're feeling such an urge. I've got to get out. I've got to uncover some flaw in my case, some flaw in my trial. And it seems hopeless. The prison guards are telling them, oh, you know, you're here because you deserve to be here. You're never getting out of here before you're supposed to. But this very rare type of prisoner is so determined against all odds. And they study the law, they study the law. And in many cases, they end up knowing the law better than lawyers. They're so determined. And it does happen that they uncover some flaw. And they bring up their case for review. And they get out. So we want that sense of urgency to get out of material illusion. How do we do that? By engaging in Krishna's service. A real devotee, now this is on another level, please understand. A real devotee actually doesn't demand Krishna, wants the devotee to do the service. A real devotee never demands Krishna, get me out of the material world, take me back to Godhead. A real devotee simply wants service wherever Krishna wants the service to be done. But the mystery of bhakti is that that attitude is back to Godhead. In other words, going back to Godhead is not some kind of geographical transformation. It is all about consciousness. When we simply seek devotional service, however Krishna wants it, That consciousness means you're in the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada explained this in Melbourne, that when you're thinking how to supply pleasure to Krishna, when you're thinking how to use everything to satisfy Krishna, then you're not in Melbourne, you are in the Loka Vrindavan, just by that consciousness. So yes, we want to get out of the material world, but what does that really mean for a mature devotee? It means such a devotee wants to be fully engaged in devotional service with all the senses. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Mam chayo vivicharyena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmavyaya kopate. When you are fully engaged in devotional service without interruption, you are free from the modes of material nature. So this is why Lord Chaitanya teaches us to pray, Mama janmani janmani shrade bhavatad bhaktir hoitri tvai. Birth after birth, I don't mind as long as I have service. The devotee is service-focused. And through that focus, a devotee is free from material existence. So let us analyze our motivation. Let us look at our association. Are we one of those prisoners who just wants to relax in prison and not worry about the passing of the days and nights and be happy that in your prison cell there's a little TV that you can watch all day? That's how they keep prisoners pacified. They have a little TV in the prison cell. You can just sit there in your cell and watch TV nonstop. Is that what's going to fulfill you? No, you should get out and feel the motivation to get out of prison. This is what Lord Kapiladev is giving. He's teaching you how the prison is formed. And it can sound a little difficult. Interactions of the air, the sensations of touch, one receives different forms according to destiny. By evolution of such forms, there is fire, and the eye sees different forms and color. Just take it, in short, that we don't understand how we're being entombed, how we're being imprisoned. We don't understand the construction of a prison. We're hearing about it with uneducated ears. One thing we can immediately understand is what Krishna talks about in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. Dehantara, changing of the body. We've heard in the purport that the body changes according to destiny and by the arrangement of a superior authority which controls the interaction of air and the mental situation. So you may not understand those details. How by interactions of the air and the mental situation under the control of superior authority, you get another body. But at least understand what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that you will change your bodies. And you should be concerned what my next body will be. Our condemnation of present society is that it doesn't prepare persons for their next body. Even to this audience here, that may sound a little strange. Why should I be concerned about my next body? I should be concerned with my finances. I should be concerned with my family relationships. I should be concerned with keeping healthy. Yes, all that is true, but to some degree only. For an intelligent human being, the foremost concern is what to do about not getting another body. Now try to capture this with your intelligence. Try to capture this point. It's something Srila Prabhupada says quite often. We live in a kind of so-called civilization that sets aside the problems of birth, death, disease, and old age. To try to see yourself doing that. Yes, there's birth, there's death, there's old age, there's disease, but put all those issues to the side and focus on reality. Reality is the job, the finances, the family arrangements, gratifying your senses. Or as I was explaining last night in a little program we had with some university students and the like, I explained that what you really want is meaning in your life, and you want love. And some of them admitted, they agreed with me, yes, you don't really want to say that because you're afraid you're going to be exploited and abused. When you meet someone in whatever type of relationship, you don't say, hey, you know, I want meaning and love. You keep that hidden in the back. But that's actually what's going on. You want meaning for your life. You want love. You want your life to feel significant. Even in traditional society in India, where everything is about do your duty, your parents have said do this, so you must do that. This is what your grandparents have done. Of course, you know, it's all changing. But in the traditional way, your life is already pre-planned. You marry according to whom your parents arrange you marry. Everything is about duty. Everything is about tradition. But still, even in that kind of society, underneath it all is the human urge for meaning and love. You're trusting in the system of cultural tradition, family tradition. You're trusting in that. I'll buy into this. Generations before me have bought into this system, and this way I'll get the meaning and love that I need. And what's the Western way? Based on the chaos of Western society, look, who cares about family? Who cares about this or that? You have to find your own meaning and love your own way. So whether it's this way, the traditional Indian way, or the wild Western way, everyone wants meaning and love. And then those urges for meaning and love become so dominant that, as Prabhupada says, you set aside the real issues. Okay, yeah, there's birth, death, old age, disease, but how am I going to get my meaning? How am I going to get love? But what does Krishna explain to you in Bhagavad Gita? As long as you are dominated by birth, death, disease, and old age, what is the use of your attempt for meaning and love? You're under the control of material nature. But we say, oh no, it's true I may be a prisoner of material nature, but I can get my meaning, I can get my love here in the prison house. That's enough for me. So again, we set aside, we push to the side the real issues. They're there, we say, but they're not relevant, they're not pressing. Just think about the pressing needs that you feel. Oh, what's happening at the workplace? Oh, what's happening at the home? Are there arguments at home? Oh, what are the children doing? What are the children not doing? What is the economic situation? What is the political situation? These become the most urgent issues in our life. And Bhagavad Gita will teach you, Lord Kapiladeva will teach you, that setting aside real issues and focusing on these other issues is the greatest mistake. But we really need to understand that. Otherwise, you'll think it's just Bhagavatam class talk. Yeah. Got to conquer over birth, death, disease, old age. Yeah, Kijai Swami. All right. Class is almost over. Time to get back to the real world. Got to work. Got to do this, got to do that. Right? We've all read Bhagavad Gita. Janam Ritchu Dra Vyadi. Krishna says, one who's actually intelligent sees the fault in birth, death, disease, and old age. Still, in spite of our conditioning, we need to learn to consider. And you can only learn to consider the real issues in the proper association that's motivating you. Push forward. Push ahead. Because the body will change. You may wonder, why Srila Prabhupada would repeat that over and over again. But that repetition is necessary to drill the point in our head. You're going to change your body. We're so lost in the present body we have. Look, I can't worry about the next body. I have to figure out how to enjoy this body. We feel like the advert I saw for a fitness center had a sign, big letters on the fitness center. One life, one body, one opportunity. Sounds natural, doesn't it? One life, one body, one opportunity. Sounds practical, yes. And don't think it's automatic that when someone witnesses the horrors of how life is so temporary, how the body can be finished so quickly, don't think it's automatic that such persons then begin to consider the fragility and temporariness of material life and how there must be something better. You know, in the seventh canto, Hiranyakashipu is trying to console his relatives after the slaying of Hiranyaksha by the Supreme Personality God in the form of Varahadeva. So Hiranyakashipu is consoling his relatives. It's amazing that even though he's a demon, he has knowledge that we're not the body, we're spirit soul. But why then a demon? Because even you may understand you're not the body, you're spirit soul, but if you're against the authority of the Supreme Personality of God, then you're a demon. So Hiranyakashipu was giving lessons in Atmatattva, science of the spirit soul, to his relatives. You know, we're not the body. The body changes. We are different than the body. He was trying to console his relatives in that way because they were grieving over Hiranyaksha's death. They were all being philosophical and listening to some philosophy. And you know the term for this situation. Smashana Vairagya. Vairagya, renunciation, detachment. Smashana, funeral place or crematorium place, renunciation. When you go to a funeral, you can notice people are thinking deeply. Life is like a dream. It comes and goes so quickly. They get very philosophical. But what happens as soon as they leave the funeral ceremony? You've experienced that yourself? Yes. Back to business as normal. You can't think about the temporariness. You can't think about death. You've got to focus on what's right in front of you. So this is called Smashana Vairagya. During the funeral ceremony at the crematorium, you're very reflective. And maybe you're looking at the dead body and you're thinking, soon that will be me. Yes, many of you have been to funeral ceremonies and you've seen the body and you're thinking, soon. It's just a matter of time before my body will be like that, lifeless and dead. So you're thinking philosophically, what is the real purpose of life? I've got to find out. But then the ceremony is over. You leave, you go back to work, you go back to your normal routine, forget all about it. Because you have to focus. Material life demands, you have to be motivated. Philosophical reflection doesn't give you the opportunity to be super motivated for material life. But not everyone even comes to this level of temporary renunciation, crematorium. Renunciation. Some persons go the opposite. Did you know that? I've heard directly from emergency room staff at a hospital. Those persons who are in the emergency room, medical staff who receive all the ambulances, the persons who have been crushed in auto accidents and burned and fired. If they're atheistic, do you know what they say? Seeing all that death, seeing all that gruesome horror, just makes us more determined to enjoy life while you have it. Yeah, they say like that. Not that seeing those horrors causes them to be detached. Oh, what is life? How temporary it is. How fragile the body is. How easily we can be snuffed out. No, they mean seeing these mangled bodies coming from auto accidents, seeing these burned bodies makes us realize you've got to enjoy every moment that you got. Get it while you can. So this is why Krishna says what is night for the materialist is day for the introspective sage and vice versa. Two different worlds, two different visions. Let us appreciate Lord Kapila Dev's advice. He's trying to teach us about the prison, our terms of imprisonment, and how to get out through devotional service. All right, any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mara, for the wonderful class. In the class, you mentioned about laziness. In like most of us are feel lazy, and one aspect of that is Kali Yuga. And can you talk more about it? How to, for the devotees, how to make sure that we are not lazy, and you know, we keep progressing in our
how to break out of Manda consciousness. Manda sumanda mateo, manda bhagya viputrita. Very slow about spiritual matters and very quick about material matters. And what does Bhagavatam say? Manda bhagya viputrita. And above all, in age of Kali, everyone is always disturbed, full of anxiety. Unfortunate and slow, and above all, always disturbed. So we mentioned about how association is so important. Shape your association so that it's motivating to move forward in bhakti. That is your duty. To always associate with devotees who are moving forward. That will determine so much of your spiritual advancement. In the association of those who are more motivated than you, you'll share in their motivation. And then you can help others to be more motivated. Otherwise, it is difficult to motivate yourself on your own. Because The influences from material nature, from the prison, are so powerful. We need to feel the reality of how material nature is pushing us around, dominating us. Try to consider that. And then learn the process how to resist that domination, how to defeat it with Krishna's mercy. Yes?
We're talking about laws earlier.
Yeah.
And how do we know the difference between right and wrong when someone makes it? A wrong decision, and then which law governs that? Srila Prabhupada's policy said we allow the karmi law, as we call it, we allow them to do their job. So do we go against those laws if we feel?
Human laws are imperfect, but because we are an outreach society of devotees, we act in such a way that does not jeopardize Lord Chaitanya's missionary focus. But we do recognize that human-made laws are imperfect. Still, because we're in this world for the purpose of spreading Lord Chaitanya's mission, we acknowledge those laws. We follow them so that our outreach mission is not jeopardized and threatened. But we understand that Dharma tu sakshat bhagavat pranita, the real laws, Dharma, come from the Supreme Personality, Godhead. No imperfect, tiny human being can make laws that apply to everyone in all circumstances and all times. So we have a double vision. We know the real laws are Dharma. At the same time, we're living in a material society and we want persons to be attracted to Lord Chaitanya's mission. And who is attracted to joining a bunch of criminals, as I see it? Everything belongs to Krishna, it's true. But what happens if you all just walk out of this class and start breaking into people's houses? Hey, what you've got belongs to Krishna. Who's going to be attracted to join that? Only low-class jackoids and burglars will want, oh yeah, this is a great movement. So we recognize that Krishna is the real proprietor and actually everyone is a thief in the material world. But for the sake of outreach, we follow the laws so that we don't spoil the outreach mission. Just like years ago in Melbourne, devotees had created a problem by raiding one greenhouse for flowers to give to the deity.
I used to work there.
Huh?
I used to work there.
Now, yes, the flowers all belong to Krishna, and flowers offered to the deity get so much benefit. But at the same time, raiding the greenhouse would cause some public relations problems. So the situation came before Srila Prabhupada. And he was speaking to the lawyer who had represented the devotees. And Prabhupada told him, actually, everything belongs to Krishna. So in one sense, the devotees have done no wrong. But on the other hand, we don't want to embarrass the outreach mission. So therefore, he thanked the lawyer for his representing the devotees in court. So there's that double reality.
You mentioned Lord Chaitanya's mission. Yeah. There was an example of the devotees going to see Lord Chaitanya and they stopped by the tax man. But by the Lord's arrangement, they could get past and they could keep going to see Lord Chaitanya. It's in the Chaitanya Mangala. That part. I'm not sure the exact chapter, I can't reference it. But then there's the friend of the associate. He was spending the money on the dancing girls and his job was to collect the taxes. But he got, you know that one?
Going up at the night.
Yes, that one. And he had
spending money on dancing girls. But Lord Chaitanya said like that because devotees were coming to him saying, can you please save Gopinath Patanayak? He's tax collector. He's about to be executed by the king because he didn't hand over all the tax money. So Lord Chaitanya was demonstrating his role as a total sannyasi with nothing to do with the material world. Why are you bringing these problems to me? If Gopinath Patanayaka didn't turn over all the tax money to the king, then that's his problem. Anyway, what's he doing? He's spending it all on dancing girls. In other words, don't bother him.
He said he couldn't help him.
But actually, indirectly, he did. Yes. And at the end of that pastime, Gopinath Patanayaka came out materially better than before. But he told Lord Chaitanya, this is not the real benefit of your influence, that now I'm more wealthy than before. The real benefit of your mercy is pure devotional service to you. I have not gotten the real benefit.